Welcome to Fantasy Football Today Dynasty. This is your host, Heath Cummings, with Sigmund Bloom, his second appearance on the show for your final 2024 NFL Draft preview. Sig, thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, it's great to be here. You know, this is a great time for us because this is the last time until the training camp opens that people care about what we have to say. And they're geeking out like us, and they're spending way too much time. It's really great, honestly, not to make it a little less light, but the number of people that are conversant and fluent in all things draft compared to 15, 20 years ago when there was just a few of us, much like fantasy football, it's fun because there's a lot more good conversations to have now.
There are a bunch of good conversations. A lot of our conversation today is going to kind of be built around the Bloom 100. So why don't you tell, I know the pre-draft version is out. Tell everybody just a brief overview of what that is.
Yeah, it's just something I started in 2005, 2006 for big leagues, my favorite kind of fantasy football leagues where you play a full defense. And when you're doing your rookie draft, it's a much wider pool of players. So it includes defensive players. Obviously, your mileage may vary depending on your league's lineups, scoring, whether there's super flex, tight end, premium, things like that. But take the best stab at ranking the top 100 players for fantasy football until it gets blown up by the draft. And then we do it all over again.
So that gives you kind of a brief overview of what we're going to talk about. We actually will, at the end of this show, actually have a little bit of IDP talk. I know every once in a while you get people saying, hey, could we talk more about individual defensive players? We'll have just a little bit of that for rookie drafts at the end of the show. We're also going to talk about whether or not there is a clear RB1, whether or not we have a historic wide receiver class, and much, much more. We always start with three questions for our guest. Three questions for you, Sigmund Bloom.
Okay.
At the very beginning, can you tell everybody a little bit about your rookie evaluation process? What goes in to the Bloom 100?
Yeah, I'm going to watch the players. I'm going to get my little movie in my head. But, you know, Heath, the longer I've been doing this, the more I'm paying attention to what so many other smart people are saying. And they're doing it from so many different perspectives, watching the tape, analytics, measurables, and then, of course, just the weight of people that have been doing this for a long time, even to the point now, Heath, where it's almost like when you own a house, like you have your plumber, you have your electrician, you have the person if you need to, you know, update your landscaping or your gardener, just like that for the draft. You know, I have John Owning if I'm talking about edge, right? Brandon Thorne if I'm talking about offensive linemen, and so on. Matt Harmon, I want to know his wide receiver takes. So in some ways, the longer I've been doing this, the more, I don't want to say humble, because no one should say that they're humble, but certainly I've been humbled by the process, and I factor in a lot more what people who I think are smarter than me are saying.
I would just suggest everybody listening, like, listen to people who say that. Because there are so many people specializing, as you are running through the different home repair projects. I'm getting a bathroom remodeled right now, and I do none of those things myself. So very familiar with finding someone for all of the things.
That's why we're fantasy football analysts. That's what we can do.
It's super, super helpful skill to others. It is for some. Okay. What is one of the first things I noticed when I was looking at the Bloom 100 is that you do have Jonathan Brooks at least a tier ahead of the other running backs. A lot of guys that I've had on the show over the last month, and I've even said it myself, I think, is, you know, we'll figure out who RB1 is when the NFL tells us. And I'm not sure that you're necessarily saying anything different than that, but what is it that separates Brooks from the pack in this running back class?
Yeah, and I will say that it would take something really striking for Brooks to not be my running back one after the draft. And that, I don't care who Dallas takes. It's probably going to be Brooks anyway. Brooks would have to fall to the fifth or sixth round, some sort of red flag that they've detected something off in his recovery. Because when you watch the running backs in this class, he stands out as the running back who projects as a three down running back and a workhorse. And I think that what's being overlooked with Brooks, you're getting an ACL discount here. And I know we shouldn't project ACL full recovery. We shouldn't project players to get back to exactly who they were before the ACL. But Brooks is young, And I think the list of players who have gotten all the way back is longer than the list, especially players that have ACL injuries in their early 20s, players that don't get all the way back. But, you know, we have to take that into account.
Right.
But he already looks like a veteran. He has a three down skill set. He has versatility in terms of his skills and traits, right? He's got some speed. He's got some functional strength. He can get yards after contact. He's elusive. He's a good pass catcher. But what's being overlooked is Bijan Robinson. So we have an apples to apples comparison here. He was 90-95% of what Bijan Robinson was in this offense, in this Texas offense, before he got hurt. So I think the other running backs you can look at, you know, guys like Jalen Wright, Trey Benson has a three down skill set projection, but he's not there, right? Blake Corum, probably not a 2 minute drill third down back, and so on and so forth. Brooks is that guy. And I think if Brooks was healthy, he would be in the conversation at least to go in the top 35 or 40, which in this era of running back value might as well be a first round pick.
Very well said. And I think in terms of rookie drafts, we would see him listed right there, if not top in the top four conversation, definitely fifth. In a one quarterback league, I think he'd be right behind the top three wide receivers and Brock Bowers. We'll talk more about that tier in just a moment. I do think another way to look at this, because, and it hasn't happened as much this year, but a lot of times we get close to the draft and people start saying, yeah, but wait until you see next year. Wait until you see 2025. I don't really get that feel as much this year as we did last year. What is the point in this class where you would rather just have a random 2025 first than make your selection?
I don't know if there is a point. I suppose if we're talking about one quarterback leagues, because of course in super flex leagues, which I don't want to say super flex is the default, Heath,
right?
But when I put out one quarterback rankings, I hear a lot more people say, where are the super flex rankings? Then if I put out super flex, people say, well, where are the one quarterback rankings? Take that, you know, as far as the trends here. But I think that the answer, Heath, depends on where we see some of these second tier wide receivers land. There's a huge second tier of wide receivers, 10, 12, 15 after the top three. And landing spot is so important. Another thing that has changed over the 20 years or so I've been doing this is at the beginning, I would have insisted, because of course this is based on my valuation, right? Talent, talent, talent. Talent creates opportunity. Talent determines the destiny of the player in the league. And the longer I've been doing this, the more I've watched, the more I've processed, the more I see that landing spot is important. And not because of immediate opportunity. Forget about immediate opportunity. Immediate opportunity doesn't matter. And maybe for running back, it does to an extent, but I don't think that immediate opportunity matters. It actually circles back to talent matters. But what really matters is the ability of an organization to help a player find his successful career path.
Yep.
And that's fit, but that's also quality of organization. And with these wide receivers, Heath, I think what's fascinating, again, to reflect on the time I've been doing this, the position has become segmented. It's a WR position, but there's really three positions. And teams that successfully deploy players where they're proficient in those roles, you know, what would have happened to Cooper Kupp if Chicago had drafted him?
Yeah.
Right? So I think that that is going to sort out where that breakpoint is, probably somewhere around the late first. But because of this wide receiver class, I think maybe not in the first at all. Maybe you would prefer the 11th or 12th pick of this year's draft to a random first next year.
Yeah, I think I think in Superflex that's definitely more true, because we're not super excited at this point. Now we'll find a quarterback or two that we're excited about by the time we get to 2025. But yeah, as of right now, it does look like it's not as exciting as the class we're getting ready to see drafted this week. Let's take our first break, and then we will dig a little bit deeper into the Bloom Top 100. So I said we were going to dig deeper, but I do want to start with a couple of questions about tier one first, because we've talked about these guys a lot, but we've not heard your thoughts about these guys. And I think most people would agree, when you're looking at a one quarterback league, you've got a tier one that consists of Harrison, Neighbors, Roma Dunze, and Brock Bowers. Are these as close as we get to can't miss prospects?
Yes, absolutely. And again, the variable is which organization do they land in? And the maybe how we sort this out. Don't assume that the order of these four, when we get to rookie drafts firing up on Monday, will be the order they're drafted in, because which quarterback they're paired up with. You know, a terrific example, Heath, could be a player like Malik Nabers. You know, Malik Nabers with the Giants. Right. Brock Bauer, you know, but Malik Nabers, if he goes to the Chargers, oh wow, now he's number one probably, even though in both scenarios maybe he's the first wide receiver off the board. You don't know. I think Brock Bowers is another good one. Are we really, you know, Brock Bowers with the Jets?
Yeah. Right.
You know, but are we that much more excited if it's the Colts?
If it's the Chargers and they don't take an elite wide receiver, and we're just going to do the Mark Andrews thing all over again.
Right. Or, and the Chargers are interesting. The Broncos. Yeah. I mean, really, I think what you would be hoping for is Brock Bowers to fall. So here's where things get counterintuitive. Brock Bowers falling to 18, and I do think that's his floor with Cincinnati.
Right.
That's his best case scenario for fantasy, I think. So this is going to get shaken up, but all of these players are tremendous, tremendous prospects. I think all of them would be worthy of the number one overall pick last year for sure in one quarterback leagues. I think that all three of these wide receivers would be the number one wide receiver going back to the Ja'Marr Chase class, probably. And what will be interesting, Heath, is that we hear all this talk about quarterbacks, trade up for quarterbacks in the NFL draft. But our team's going to trade up for one of these wide receivers.
Right.
That is actually the compelling case. We may have one of those situations, Heath, where we hear, oh, there's been a trade and a team has moved up. And we're thinking, oh, they're moving up for a quarterback. And it's actually one of these receivers.
Great stuff. So let's talk about two of those receivers, because we've had Marvin Harrison people. We've had Malik Nabers people. I'm getting close to a coin flip between the two of them. What's the tiebreaker for you between Harrison and Nabers?
Honestly, it's going to come down to the team they land on and the quarterback they're with, right? I love the idea of Kyler Murray throwing to Marvin Harrison Jr. I'd love it. You saw what he did with DeAndre Hopkins. And if you want to look at strengths overlapping with strengths, I think that's a lot of fun. Especially scoring PPR leagues and things like that. But if the next pick is Malik Nabers to the Chargers and you pair him up with Justin Herbert, and now you have play action, hopefully shot plays on play action to Nabers, and otherwise that situation where he has the quarterback who can unlock all of his potential, that looks good. So I almost feel like it's like musical chairs. Except when the music stops, we don't want one of these guys to end up on the Giants. I say it, but that's really what it comes down to. And the Bears may seem like a destination where a player is blocked right now, but at the same time, DJ Moore, I'm not sure exactly when his contract is up, but I know Keenan Allen's basically a one-year rental. And if Caleb Williams is that guy, and if Shane Waldron is that guy as an offensive coordinator, they could all be good. So I really think that I'll also say that in terms of true ceiling, you know, if we're looking for someone to be in that Justin Jefferson, Chase, CD Lamb tier, Nabers probably has a better chance of getting there because of his big play ability. However, he also is the player that is the least polished or refined or consistent in his execution. So there's a little bit lower floor there. They're so close. And mostly I think we should just be really excited to watch these guys play on Sundays.
So I noticed, we talked about tier one. In tier two, you do have a couple of wide receivers, Brian Thomas and Ladd McConkey. And then you've got that mega tier in tier three with 10 wide receivers, including Xavier Worthy, Troy Franklin, guys like that. So what is it for you that separates Thomas and McConkey from that other group?
Thomas, it's because we don't know how good he can be.
Right.
We have no idea. And he may just be the guy that he is right now. I forget who tossed out the comparison. I thought it was a good one. Might have been Scott Barrett. Might have been Thorne Eistrom. I'm sorry. I shouldn't do this if I can't remember.
We do it. It's okay.
Yeah. But Christian Watson, I thought is a good Christian Watson with good hamstrings, right? And if you're getting that, and again, who's the quarterback? Is the quarterback Patrick Mahomes? Quarterback Josh Allen? You know, oh boy. Even if the quarterback is Trevor Lawrence, so we're looking at those as better case scenarios for him. But he does have the ability to hopefully learn more of the route tree because the speed and the size are there, and he's going to scare defenses. With McConkey, I think it's you already have it's opposite. You already have a finished product.
Correct.
Now, you've got some medical concerns, but McConkey is a guy. And the other thing you like about McConkey, and this is that funny tightrope we do during the draft, because he could be a late first round pick. He could be a Kansas City Chief. You know, he could fall into the second round and be a Carolina Panther. Although maybe your gut says they've already told him they're going to take him. So these things, we balance these things. But McConkey, you already see the polished separation ability and the speed and ball skills. I mean, he's not going to win a lot of contested balls. He's not going to get, he's not Troy Franklin. Okay. He's not a finesse player, but he is going to be a player that has to create separation and play in the deep game, which I think he will be able to do right away.
Well, yeah, create separation is the one thing I feel relatively confident he's going to be able to do. I'm getting a little bit worried about what's going to happen when that separation disappears, particularly when he gets tackled. But okay, so we got some questions in the chat, and it's like you read my mind. I'd love to have your thoughts on these three. And you know what? You're going to get the thoughts on two of them right now, Javon Baker and Jermaine Burton. What I did is I went and looked at the five players that you had ranked the highest that we'd not featured. And this is a good time to tell everybody listening, if you missed it over the last month, you go to our YouTube page, you go to the videos tab. We have top 10 wide receivers according to Dynasty ADP. We have full profiles with great guests giving really good information. Same thing at running back. We've got the top 7 quarterbacks, I think, now. But some of these guys, and I don't know if you knew this or not, but I guess you would say these are the guys that you are higher on than the current consensus rookie ADP. And we will start with Jermaine Burton, your number 15 player. Don't put too much stock into the number 15, but think like, that's early round two in a one quarterback league. That's mid late round two in a super flex league. We haven't talked enough about Jermaine Burton. Tell everybody about him.
This is a guy that if you're strictly talking about tape, he's number 4 wide receiver in this class.
Right? Okay.
I mean, he at Georgia and Alabama, he more than fit in at both of those places as a player. However, and this is where I like to say we're peeking through keyholes. We're getting this information, but we don't really know how to weigh it. I haven't sat down with Burton. You haven't sat down with Burton. And even in that case, you'd be talking about a very small piece of soft information. But many people are saying, hey, he was not on the good graces of his coaches at both of those places. I think Dane Brugler put out there 6 schools in 8 years. And I know that includes high school, but there's an inherent instability here. And this is where draft capital communicates to us. And what it's going to communicate to us is just how worried is the NFL about Burton's ability to stay on the straight and narrow and stay on as a team player to unlock all that ability. He's a late first, early second round, at worst, talent. But if we see him fall, say, to the third day, to the fourth round, now we're worried.
Right.
If we see him fall to the late second, we're not as worried. And then the question becomes again, where does he land? Because I'm sporting my Pittsburgh gear here. On one hand, the Steelers have briefly in some cases, but they have gotten the most out of some of these types of prospects in the past. Martavis Bryant comes to mind, of course. Antonio Brown for a long time. Even Deontay Johnson to an extent. And now George Pickens. But are the Steelers tired of that? Are the Steelers like, hey, can we get some guy who's not a headache for once? It's going to be really interesting to see what they do with this class, because I think they're the team that everybody believes is the best at finding wide receiver talent, and they need it. So Jermaine Burton, the Steeler, might be exciting for us, but maybe not for them. But it certainly would be the organization I would pick as being the most likely to get good football out of him.
So let's talk about that upside. And I think a person who was in the news this week was Kadarius Toney. Brett Veach talking about how the Chiefs have not given up on him. We've got videos of him still playing catch with Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes loves Kadarius Toney from like February through August. But we also know that he's not been able to put it together despite multiple chances. He's going to get at least one more because, and Veach said this in his quote, "I think he's our most talented wide receiver." Does Burton have the type of talent that's going to get him multiple chances? And how would you compare, like Toney was a first round pick. Yeah. How would you compare their overall upside as players?
I think that Burton's upside's higher.
Okay.
I think that Burton's upside is higher because he has the skills. You know, you can think of it as traits, speed, elusiveness, lateral agility, and so on, leaping ability. All of these things are like that can of food, whatever you want to put in there, caviar, sardines. Maybe the food might not be the same for each player, but you need the skills to be the can opener.
Right.
And without the skills, without releases, without route running ability, without the ability to handle tighter coverage, like we talk about with McConkey, where everything gets tighter, it doesn't matter. And, you know, so I think with Kadarius Toney, we knew coming out. And the other thing about Kadarius Toney is, I mean, I guess he would have gone in the first round if Urban Meyer didn't take him. Like, I mean, I'm sorry, if the Giants didn't take him, because Urban Meyer wanted him. But is that an endorsement? Is that something right. You should be excited? You know, so, you know, Toney, I mean, there are some players in this class like Toney where you say, just get the ball in his hands. And then after that, that's where you see all the value. But there's a list of players like that. He does long and we've forgotten most of them, right? For every Deebo Samuel, there's 10 guys that we say, just get the ball in his hands in the NFL and it'll work out. Or even Cordarrelle Patterson. Look how long it's taken for Cordarrelle Patterson to get to a place where his usage unlocks his value in the NFL. He was a first round pick. So I think Burton has a lot of the refinement we want as a wide receiver. But I do also think that because of the reputation, again, if he's a fourth, fifth round pick, Heath, he might only get one or two strikes.
Right.
He's a second round pick. He's going to get three or four.
Excellent. Excellent stuff. Let's take one more short break. Let's talk about the guy that you have right behind Burton, your number 16 player, another guy who you're probably looking for in round two based on these rankings, Javon Baker out of UCF. What's his profile like?
A lot of people like him. And he's another one that started out at Alabama. So it's so interesting, too. One of the things that's really fun about doing this for a long time is you see how things change. And I think name, image, and likeness and the transfer portal has really changed this, where the number, and we'll see if down the road this affects player development. I don't think it's going to. And just really quick as an aside, since I got off on this tangent.
Yes.
Teams are saying there are fewer draftable players than most years. I don't know if you're hearing about this, Heath.
Okay. Yeah,
teams are saying like we can only fill up to like the fifth or sixth round this year. And the reason is because name, image, and likeness, the money that players are getting in college, is allowing them to not have to be between a rock and a hard place when it comes to underclass. I think the underclassmen peaked at like 130s and now it's down into the 50s. And when I was doing the draft beat, what I heard all the time, especially from agents, but even from teams, was too many players are declaring too early. They're declaring before they're really ready, but there was pressure. There was pressure to be able to make some money for your family. And now that players are getting name, image, and likeness, they can actually be judicious and take their time, which is actually going to, I think, lead to a higher hit rate. But for the time being, this year, there's a little bit of a shortage because the players aren't coming out early. So this is going to end up being good for the NFL and good for the players. I think the only people complaining about are NCAA coaches, which means it's good for everybody.
Anyway. Well, I think the other place that we are seeing that show up is maybe in the smaller school recruiting. Mm-hmm. Is I don't think they're as interested in developmental freshmen as they used to be, because they're just going to take the guys who are transferring away from Alabama, who are transferring away from the Power Five schools, and they're going to fill their roster up that way to make sure they win. So yeah. I think it's impacted the recruiting just a little bit as well. What do you see in terms of Baker's upside?
Yeah, it's there. Because what you see is player, 2020, 2021 didn't really make an impact with Alabama, goes to UCF and immediately is an impact player at UCF. And he has just the way he moves, the way he moves in his routes, the way he gets his releases, the way he is at the catch point, he's a natural. And he has measurables that you're looking for in terms of explosiveness, in terms of his size. And he's a player that you can do a lot of different things with. You know, he's got value before the catch in his route running, and he's got value at the catch point with his ability to get up and get the ball in the air. But he also has value after the catch. This was a guy who was there when Devontae Smith and Jalen Waddle were there. And he says he learned a lot from them. And he did exactly what you want him to do when he went down to UCF. He dominated. I think that he is certainly a player that can be a quarterback's best friend. And unlike some of the receivers in this class, Heath, he has a wider application of uses. So I think that we're not as worried about where he's going to land.
I think you bring up that wider application of uses, and it's good point to just move on to the next wide receiver, because Roman Wilson is a guy that I was a little bit more excited about at the beginning of the process than I am now, because I'm not sure how wide his application is. He feels right. Like he could end up in a one role spot where he's good for an NFL team, but doesn't help as much for fantasy.
Yeah, this is where we get to the difficulty of the very big number of slot only guys, or certainly guys that their best application is in the slot. And we also have not just that, but the archetype of the slot receiver is changing. You know, right. We have some guys that are probably best suited as big slots. So we have a lot of these guys in this class. And I don't want to be too definitive when I say this, but you know, guys like Roman Wilson, Ricky Pearsall, I think are slot only types,
right.
Malik Washington, Jalen McMillan. And the thing is, you know, this is a good contrast here, is that a guy like Jalen McMillan is a crafty slot only. He's more of the what we remember, a Tyler Boyd type, whereas, you know, someone like Ricky Pearsall could be more of a vertical type. And Roman Wilson reminds us more of a Golden Tate type. And you could look at a player like Christian Kirk, who's doing well with the Jags as
right.
a slot. Primary slot wide receiver, but again, with other teams, it might not have worked out like that. So I think when we sort these guys out, I think it is going to depend on the offensive coordinator and their ability to use that player, and also whether they're going to share snaps, because we also have, you know, a team like Buffalo. Here's the other problem. Tight ends are starting to now take some of those slot snaps.
Right.
So, you know, unfortunately, what's great for a team, Heath, which is an offense of interchangeable parts, and depending on the opponent that week, you use your personnel to attack the weakness of the opponent, right? Game planning should be based as much on the weakness of the opponent as it should on the strength of the offense. And, you know, depending on where these slot only guys land, they may be very inconsistent from week to week.
You know, that brings up a funny story that I'm not sure if I've told on this show before. So I was in the cafeteria at CBS one day, back when I was in the cafeteria regularly at CBS. And Brady Quinn walks in and asks me something about how things are going. It was right in the middle of the season, and my head was... But it was I said something about, you know, it's getting more difficult because of how much smarter the coaches are getting.
Yeah.
And he kind of looked at me like I was crazy. Like, what's fantasy guy saying about head coaches getting smarter? But I said, it used to be so much easier to predict what they were going to do with individual players and what they were going to do in an individual game. And that thing you're talking about, having multiple parts that can do multiple things, makes our job of predicting what's going to happen much more difficult, because it makes the defense's job of predicting what's going to happen much more difficult. I think that's a very good point. You mentioned all those, the kind of the slot only guys, the way you see it right now. Just to clarify, in terms of Pearsall, because yep. I know there's some people that really like him. In terms of Washington, we've had quite a bit of questions about him. Wilson is your favorite of that group before the draft. Is that right?
Well, I mean, not necessarily for fantasy.
Okay.
I, This is so difficult, right? I mean, well, it's fun. I mean, the good thing about this class of wide receivers is it really does play out like glass half full, glass half empty.
Right.
And you know, there's so many, even if you just take the slot only guys, there's so many variations just within that group. So a guy like Roman Wilson is exciting because he hasn't been asked to do, this is like JJ McCarthy, right? He hasn't been asked to do a lot, but what he's been asked to do, he's excelled at. And you wonder if there's room for growth and room, just because we haven't seen him do it doesn't mean he can't.
Right.
But we already know, again, he's on that Golden Tate kind of track as a player in the NFL. A player like Pearsall is maybe more of a player that has some of the things. I'm remembering Dante Pettis, you know, has some right. of the things that you can picture him playing inside, outside. The skills are there, but functional play strength or just how he's going to handle a more rough and tumble style of play in the NFL. You wonder how that's going to project. So, you know, it's really, really difficult. You know, Troy Franklin is another guy, I think, that is more of a finesse player. And I think that in some offenses, you can make that work to an extent. But, you know, Dante Pettis kind of haunts me, because I think even when we watched Dante Pettis, everything we thought was going to project and be NFL quality in terms of traits and skills was there. But because he was a finesse player, it didn't translate. One of the columns I added a while ago, Heath, when I'm doing my little breakdowns, keeping my little spreadsheets, is just competitive toughness.
Yeah.
And that can be all the difference. Competitive toughness can make a 3 out of 10 or 4 out of 10 guy physically hang around the league and keep a role and stay useful, and a 7 or 8 out of 10 guy in terms of the tools and the gifts can never unlock them, because the NFL is going to test you. So these slot only guys are tough. But I think with Roman Wilson, since you're not as worried about functional strength, you're not as worried. Again, when you think of Golden Tate, you don't think of a player that was inconsequential when it came to the physical side of the game.
Right.
And that's why that's the comparison you get for Roman Wilson a lot.
So enough of these guys. Like, the great stuff on Roman Wilson.
Yeah.
There was a guy on this list that I was I've talked about him plenty. I don't think we actually did a full profile on him, Malachi Corley. And you had mentioned those guys that just find a way to get the ball in his hands. Yeah. And this is, for me, the ultimate just find a way to get the ball in his hands. Talk about like what is the concern of whether teams will be able to do that or not, but then also the upside if they can.
Yeah, the concern is, again, not every one of these guys is going to turn out to be Deebo Samuel.
Right.
They're going to turn out to be, maybe in a median scenario, Cordero Patterson, and on the low end, like a LaVisca Chenault.
Right.
Once the ball's in his hands, then that's when the magic happens. You just figure it out. That's not something that happens in the NFL. It's just not.
Right.
So it's difficult when you say he's a running back. Maybe he needs to convert to running back. Again, Cordero Patterson comes up. LaVisca Chenault lined up in the backfield.
Well, I think Rondale Moore played a little more running back last year.
Yeah. Sure, exactly. Not quite as thickly built as these guys, but definitely the same archetype in terms of usage, in terms of application. So how many of these guys have really hit? You know, even Curtis Samuel has speed and can be a vertical threat to that. And you just see it's been just for flashes, just for small stretches. So we do a lot of making bridges to projections. And Ryan Riddle, I got to quote Ryan Riddle like at least once a day during draft season. If y'all don't know, he used to write for Bleacher Report, wrote from a player's perspective, unfiltered. He would say things like, early round picks have to prove they can't play, late round picks have to prove they can,
right?
Things like that, just to help guide us about opportunities. And like we were talking about with Jermaine Burton, for instance, and he made sure to point out, like, hey, there's not a lot of player development going on in the NFL. You know, if players are being developed in the NFL, it's more by their teammates, honestly, not by their coaches. The coaches are coaching them up for what they want them to do in the scheme and on Sundays. But as far as development goes, so I think it's very dangerous. So I have Corley near the bottom of that tier. And I just think that projecting that will the yada, yada, yadding, the hardest part. That's why you can contrast him with someone like Burton. Burton has all that hard stuff figured out. He just has to figure out how to not be a knucklehead.
So that was the risk side of Malachi Corley. Now let's talk about the other side. Because if he develops into even like just somebody that can kind of get open, or right. if he goes somewhere, he's not going to land with Kyle Shanahan probably because they're more likely to trade Ayuk than Debo. But I talked about like if they had traded Debo and drafted Corley, like his upside is incredible, right? Because of what he can do after the catch.
Sure. Well, if the volume is there,
right.
I mean, you know, I think that you're going to need a match in terms of scheme. You're right. And there's not somebody jumping to the forefront of my mind right now. But I do think that this is one where, you know, some of these players, some of these wide receivers, we're going to say which quarterback did they land with?
Right.
And some of them we're going to say, which offensive coordinator did they land with?
Yes.
Both things can be temporary. And notice what I'm not saying is, what's the wide receiver depth chart look like? So one thing I want to stress while we're talking about this stuff, don't get fixated on what the depth chart looks like today. Only bad organizations draft that way. Think about a year down the line, 2 years down the line. And now you're looking at that opportunity opening up no matter what. If you're talking about a second day pick, unless they just fail to get out of the airplane hangar, they're going to get that chance. So yeah, Corley, you know, let me add this too. Josh Norris, our colleague over at Underdog, does a tremendous job of this. And I highly recommend everybody to check out his work or do some of this themselves. Listen to the post-draft press conferences when the position coaches, the coordinators, the head coach, the GM talk about why they took a player. What did they see? What do they have planned?
Right.
So in the case of Corley, what I want to see with Corley is that they are being realistic about what he can and can't do. Because let's take a player like Quentin Johnston, another player you'd say, wow,
the
physical tools are gorgeous. Just get the ball in his hands and you've got a dangerous player. What about the rest of his game? Oh, it'll get there. Well, the Chargers put him out there before it was there, and we saw the disastrous consequences. Now, that doesn't mean he's a bust, but I do want to see that a team, and the funny thing is the Chargers even said he's not ready for this, but they had him do it anyway whenever everyone was hurt. Go ahead.
I thought that was a little bit, and I've been a big fan of Kellen Moore's for the past half a decade. But I thought the way they kind of got to a point where they didn't have much choice with Johnston. Like, you had to put him out there. But those were the things that you wanted to do? Like, how many times do you have to throw him the ball running away from the quarterback to see that he cannot do that at this point?
Right.
I don't understand why Kellen Moore didn't put Quentin Johnston in a position to have more success as a rookie, other than he was trying to teach him how to be a real wide receiver.
Yeah, but then you destroy confidence. I mean, this is another one of the things. And look, some players are resilient, and they find in that struggle what they need to, you know, the sword from the stone to slay the dragon being, you know, consistency or unlocking that extra level in their game so that they actually can, what they bring to bear, like use it to help their team win games, help fantasy players win games. And so confidence is a big thing too. But yeah, you're right. And the funny thing about the Kellen Moore thing, just to put a cap on that conversation, is we thought, okay, Kellen Moore is going to unlock Justin Herbert and all of, you know, he's been struggling with all these offensive coordinators with limited horizon mindsets and with the Chargers and the Cowboys. Now that it's Mike McCarthy and Brian Schottenheimer back to the future, they're going to be terrible. They're going to be an offense that underachieves. The Cowboys come out of the bye and it's actually CeeDee Lamb, you know, the one person that Kellen Moore was good for the Chargers was Keenan Allen.
Yeah.
But he couldn't do that with CeeDee Lamb. It was actually McCarthy and Schottenheimer that did it with CeeDee Lamb, which just shows how little that we do know.
That is a great way to end, especially when talking about Malachi Corley, because I'm not sure how much we actually know. I do worry, and I think he's probably a good player to bring up this point before we get to the fifth player I want to talk about.
Yeah.
Some of those press conferences, one of the first words you're going to hear out of the coach's mouth is new kickoff rule. There are going to be some skill position players that get drafted higher than they would if they hadn't changed the kickoff rule. And that might fool some people when it comes to rookie drafts. So I would just advise people to be careful if you hear those words. Mm-hmm. One more player. We had to get a running back in here. And he is actually the player that was the fifth highest in your rankings. I think number 28. So a round three pick, running back Will Shipley. Mm-hmm. Is he simply like, we hope he turns into somebody who catches 60 passes, or do you think that he could be successful as a rusher as well?
Well, he could be successful as a rusher by default. What I mean by that is, you know, we know what he brings. Dylan Lauby out of New Hampshire is kind of similar. I mean, we know he's a refined receiving running back. In this NFL, those players are going to get on the field or have a better chance to get on the field earlier in their career. And then you may just have a situation by default, he's good enough. I mean, Austin Eckler was never a player you would look at and say, yeah, that's somebody you want leading your backfield in carries. But because he was so good as a receiver, you know, he was very productive as a runner. He was able to, and partially because none of the other running backs the Chargers drafted to try to take some off of his plate were good enough. So I think Shipley has that calling card, and he has some good physical ability. He has that calling card. And then it's a question, and look, the running backs are going to get shaken up. The whole thing's going to, I mean, the Blue 100, this is a conversation starter before the draft. After the draft, it's going to look entirely different. As it is right now, if I did the Blue 100 right now, it would probably be different, because that's just the nature of doing rankings. But I do think Shipley is a player. He gets his foot in the door. And I think bringing up the kickoff return change is another good one to bring up, where it can help players hang on the roster, getting their foot in the door. And then you can have a situation where, like Kyren Williams, where, you know, we didn't think much of Kyren Williams, but it's a good offense and he can execute, and you see what happens.
Okay, Sig, let's start with the way up top view. What kind of IDP class is this?
Not good. Not good.
Not
good.
And not particularly excited. Okay. No,
this is a class for IDPs that I've been saying, if you need IDP help this year, especially off-ball linebacker, you might want to just trade later picks for some players that maybe only have 1 or 2 year windows of productivity. But this is not a good class. So a couple of things going on in the IDP world. One, Gary Davenport, who we all know and love, finally got the push over the goal line in the last year or so to have edge and off-ball linebacker broken up into distinct positions, because it always threw things off when you had 3-4 outside linebackers mixed in with off-ball linebackers. Depending on your scoring system, it would skew everything. So now all the edge players are together and all the off-ball linebackers are together. So what that has done is it created a glut of edge, which is the strength of this class, and a shortage of off-ball linebackers, which is the weakness of this class. So I think that, I have Peyton Wilson and Edgerrin Cooper just outside of the top 20 in the Blue 100. But when you add in how much scarcer off-ball linebackers are, that really shows how the caliber of the top prospects in this draft isn't quite where it's been in previous drafts. That being said, if either of those guys go to the Packers, I may revise it a little bit.
And so it sounds like maybe a little bit better class if you're in one of those leagues that's more big play, sack-based scoring, and a little bit worse class if you're one that's really values tackles.
Yeah, and defensive tackle, there's a Byron Murphy could be a really, really good tackle. It doesn't have a Devin Witherspoon in terms of cornerbacks, but there's some cornerbacks. So this is also a moment where I say, make sure your scoring system and lineups make these positions matter.
Right.
It makes the rookie draft so much more fun when you actually are weighing these guys earlier in the draft than if they're falling. But I put them late in the Blue 100 because generally that's how people set up their leagues.
Well, and I am somebody who, like, I feel like in most IDP leagues I'm in, even where the scoring I like it, half the league's just going to ignore them and fill these spots out. Just like, I will not give you a fourth round pick for this linebacker that had 150 tackles last year. I don't care. And so in those leagues, like, I'm pretty aggressive in targeting, especially like late round two, some classes. With this class and all the depth we have at wide receiver and maybe the lack of excitement in IDP, what's the earliest you're looking to target a defensive player?
It probably will be mid-late round two, and that's going to be whichever the off-ball linebackers find the best spot. And then let's see how many of these second-tier wide receivers are hurt either by landing spot or by how far they fall. Maybe they fall to the third day. I do think, I mentioned Edgerrin Cooper, a classic seek-and-destroy kind of guy. Peyton Wilson, medicals, really. I mean, otherwise, he does have everything that we want. Junior Colson is a guy out of Michigan who I think is going to be a three-down linebacker and going to be leader of his defense, but doesn't necessarily have the gaudy athleticism or big play abilities to push him up into the top tier. So those are, I would say, the top three on my board. But we may see a guy like Trevon Wallace out of Kentucky who has the best measurables of all. Team might just say, we're going to take him in the third or fourth round and we'll trust the game will catch up to the measurables. Now he becomes more interesting. So there's still a lot to be determined at this position.
And I will say, like, there's lots of talk about how this class may break the record for the most offensive players taken in the first round. Part of that is all the wide receivers and quarterbacks that everybody seems to want to draft in round one. Part of that is there's just not enough good defensive players to draft in round one. Sig, thank you so much. Yeah. Always appreciate having you here. Just take 1 minute kind of to tell everybody where they can find your work and what you guys have cooking for the NFL draft.
Yeah, football guys, Twitter, Sigmund Bloom, but we're going to be hanging out, Matt Waldman and I, with any number of guests on the first round. And, we're just going to react together, enjoy it together, right? Isn't what all this fantasy football hanging out stuff is about, is really sharing experiences and stimulating each other's minds with all the things that slant through our brain, because it's the instant reaction. It's the moment of surprise. There will be a few. It's so much fun to share those. And we can always go back to those, Heath, right? Like, you can go back to, I'm sure right now you have a time machine in your brain that you can go back to the moment you heard that the Chiefs were trading up for Patrick Mahomes, right?
I've got the tweets. I can go back and look at the live tweets of how it was so excited. And I always tell Waldman that I thank him for that.
Yeah.
Because I fell in love with Patrick Mahomes before the draft, largely because of Waldman. And then when the Chiefs did that and got the guy that I already liked more than everybody else, and there's few greater things than to like somebody more than other people. Right. Then your team likes them more than other people do.
Yeah.
Then they turn out to be the greatest player in the NFL.
You feel the ripples now, but you can feel I call it the plate tectonics. The plate tectonics of the NFL are in motion. We don't see the downstream effects until later, but that's what's so great. It's the cliffhanger of cliffhangers. Cause when the cliffhanger's over and you see who everyone drafted, well, the real story has just begun. So we love hanging out. We'll be on our YouTube channel doing that. And then Cecil and I will be breaking down the draft division by division on the Audible next week. And this gives us that gas in our tank, Heath, to make it to training camp. And then once training camp starts, football season's almost here.
Awesome, awesome stuff. And just a reminder on Fantasy Football Today, we will have a recap every night after the draft. Next, on Friday this week, FFT Dynasty is going to be a little bit later. We'll not be at 11 a.m. I will be flying back from the St. Jude event that I'm getting ready to fly to right now. And so we will talk to you Friday afternoon. Stay tuned on Twitter and here on YouTube for updates on that. That's a fantastic way to end the YouTube show. If you're not here, you're just going to have to check it out and see what I'm talking about. We'll talk to you on Friday.